And it's Wednesday, and that means it is time for the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
The people of Connecticut have spoken, and Joe Lieberman is petitioning for another shot. Will the deposed senator find his Joe-mentum as an independent in the final face-off between Democratic nominee Ned Lamont and Republican Alan Schlesinger? We'll hash out the implications of the Connecticut primary and what it spells for midterm elections in the rest of the country. And Lieberman wasn't the only incumbent to be unseated. Voters bid adieu to Georgia's fiery Cynthia McKinney and Michigan Republican Joe Schwartz. If you have comments or questions about the week's top political stories, give us a call. Our number in Washington, 800-989-8255. The email address, talk@npr.org. With us now, Mr. Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor and resident political junkie and author of his very own column at npr.org. Good to have you with us once again,
Thank
Ken.
Thank you, Lynn. Some day yesterday.
It was some day indeed. Were you up late?
We were. Brian Naylor was doing a piece out of Connecticut, and I was writing the column, and, you know, We kind of thought it was going to happen. We kind of saw it coming for the longest time. I mean, a few weeks ago, Lamont had a poll lead of 13 points. And yet when it actually happened, you say, wow. I mean, given the fact that this was the Democratic vice presidential nominee in 2000, given the fact that he's a three-term senator, given the fact that it was a few weeks ago, it was Ned Lamont was getting single digits. He was an asterisk. And yet he pulled it off. Astonishing win.
Yeah, stunning. So what does that mean? Let's talk about what it means first for the Democrats. Is this mean that there's going to be an energized Democratic voting base out there, or does this mean a divided party that's not going to be able to win?
Well, I think both, because, one, you have a very angry Democratic electorate, and you saw that in Connecticut, not only angry at the war and the decision to go to the war and the vote to go to the war, but in the case of Joe Lieberman, the fact that he defended his vote and defended the war far longer than other Democrats. And not only that, he criticized Democrats for standing up to the president on the war. And I think that was part of what really brought Joe Lieberman down. It's not just the war, because if it was just voting for the war, then Hillary Clinton would be in trouble in New York. Maria Cantwell would be in trouble in Washington State. Dianne Feinstein would be in trouble in California, all of whom voted for the war in 2002. But the fact that Lieberman stayed with the war, defended it, and criticize fellow Democrats, that's really what hurt him.
And seemed to be a friend of the president's.
Well, there's a famous, the famous kiss, during the State of the Union message last January, when President Bush apparently embraced Joe Lieberman, buttons and paper mache's, and there were displays all over Connecticut referring to the kiss. Now, Joe Lieberman tried to respond with the hug. Bill Clinton came in a few weeks ago and gave him a big hug, but as in most things in life, kisses are more important than hugs.
And what do all those big Democratic leaders do now that they have Lamont as their candidate in Connecticut and Lieberman saying he's going to run as an independent?
Well, mostly every Democrat has said from the beginning that, I endorse Joe Lieberman. I want him to win re-nomination. That's what Chris Dodd said. That's what Hillary Clinton said. That's what Chuck Schumer said. But they will back the winner of the Democratic primary, and that's Ned Lamont. And that probably will be the case. Many Democrats, are probably not happy about Joe Lieberman running as an independent. But I don't think they're going to come in and campaign for Ned Lamont, because when all is said and done, this will be a Democratic seat no matter what happens, whether it's Lamont or Lieberman. Alan Schlesinger, the hapless Republican nominee, really does not have a shot in November. I'm surprised that Republicans didn't have put up a better candidate, but I guess nobody expected Lieberman to lose.
Why is Lieberman going to go ahead and do this? I mean,
well, in your introduction, you said that the voters in Connecticut have spoken. Joe Lieberman said that, no, the voters in Connecticut have not spoken. Just 15% of the Democrats, 15% of the voters came out in the primary yesterday. Only 7% voted for Ned Lamont. That's not really what Connecticut is all about. Now, in the history of Senate elections, if you lose a primary, you're gone. 24 senators have been defeated. I read the Political Junkie column this week. 24 senators have been defeated in the primaries in the past half century, none of whom, except for Jacob Javits in New York, none of whom decided to continue with the campaign in November. So this is really an unprecedented thing that Lieberman is trying to accomplish.
Any chance that he'll pull out, do you think?
Well, pull out or pull it off. Because there was a poll a few weeks ago that showed that in a three-way race, Lieberman wins pretty handily. He gets the independent vote. He certainly gets the Republican vote. And he got 48% of the Democratic vote. So if you add that all together, theoretically, he should get a majority of the vote in November. But, you know, if you look at the polls a few weeks ago, Ned Lamont had 6%. So polls a few weeks ago obviously did not reflect what voters are thinking today.
Well, Ned Lamont owes his success in part to liberal bloggers and organizations that championed his cause. Eli Pariser is the executive director of MoveOn.org, a liberal activist group, and that group endorsed the Lamont campaign. And now Mr. Pariser is on the phone with us now from his office in New York City. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon.
So how are you feeling about this? Are you taking some of the credit? Do you feel that MoveOn.org deserves some?
We were a very small part of what happened, but it's a very exciting thing nonetheless because, you know, what we saw in Connecticut was that voters deeply want a change in course, and that even when the party establishment says, you know, no, stick with our guy, they are ready to rise up and demand a change of course. And, you know, I think what you see in Connecticut with voters incensed about the disaster in Iraq, with them upset about the energy crisis that we have and our healthcare crisis, you know, they're upset with politicians who are defending the status quo at the time when the status quo is failing. And that's good news for Democrats because come November, there are an awful lot of Republicans who are going to have to run by defending that same status quo.
What does this mean for the Democratic Party? I mean, is your movement, is this victory an indication of a divide within the party between centrist Democrats and progressives like yourself? And is that really bad for the party, or do you think it's good for the party?
Well, I think this returns the Democratic Party to its roots and its members. You know, for the last couple of decades, really, the party has embraced a model where a few insiders and a few wealthy donors determine who the candidates are and what the message is and who runs. And that practice of triangulation and poll-driven, TV-driven politics has failed us. And it's failed the country because, you know, voters really want what the Democrats stand for. They just they get terrible candidates who don't say what they stand for. And, you know, so now what you see happening is that once again, the voters, the rank-and-file Democrats across the country, are able to have a voice in who their candidates are. And that and because of that, you see the emergence of bold leaders like Ned Lamont. You know, I think that Lamont is a blueprint for how Democrats can win, which is just you stand up and fight, you're very clear, you enunciate the principles that make Democrats different than Republicans, and people will rally behind you.
And you think that would work nationally, not just in a New England state like Connecticut?
Because the issues that were powering the Lamont race, the Iraq war, energy policy, healthcare policy, those issues are the issues not just that Democrats across the country care about, but that everyone cares about. Those are the issues that we face right now as a country. And across the board, across the political spectrum, you see this deep yearning for change. People know that the Bush presidency has been a disaster. They see politicians in Washington, especially the Republicans, not doing enough to hold the Bush administration accountable for its failures in Iraq and elsewhere. And they want to change. And so I think what happened in Connecticut, you know, this is just the kind of the first peak of this wave that is going to come sweeping across the political landscape over the course of the fall.
Eli, it's Ken Rudin here. Why are there not more primary challenges to other Democrats who voted for the war, like Hillary Clinton, like Maria Cantwell, like Herb Kohl, people like that?
Well, you know, it's not as simple as just supporting the war. You know, this is a big tent party. One can have ideological differences. But what Joe Lieberman did was consistently he acted as the kind of token Democrat that gave a veneer of bipartisanship to a deeply destructive, the deeply destructive Bush policy. And, you know, it wasn't just that he supported the war. It was that he consistently said everything's going fine in Iraq at a time when people were seeing the pictures of chaos and destruction and having their friends and relatives and neighbors coming home in body bags. And that's just not acceptable from a senator who ought to be holding the president accountable, who ought to be acting as a check and balance. And so really, I think in some ways, Senator Lieberman was uniquely uniquely defensive of the President Bush of President Bush's policies.
All right. Well, Eli, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Eli Pariser is executive director of MoveOn.org, and he joined us by phone from his office in New York City. Ken, I'm just curious what your reaction is to Eli's analysis of the race and what it means.
Well, there are angry Democrats out there, and it'll be very interesting to see if it translates to 2008. There's clearly an angry anti-war Democrat from the start, Russ Feingold from Wisconsin, who's running for pretending to run for president. He is clearly an anti-war candidate. Now, as Eli said, you know, this is not just about the war, because other Democrats have voted for the war too. It's Joe Lieberman's close relationship with the Bush administration that turned off a lot of Democrats. I understand that. But if the war becomes a litmus test for 2008, it'll be interesting to see who gets the pass from the left and the blogosphere. Is it Feingold? John Edwards from North Carolina, the former senator, is doing very well in Iowa, also saying that his vote in 2002 for the war was a mistake. So it'll be interesting to see. But Republicans also are doing the same thing. They're going to their Democrat. They're telling Democrats, Democrat incumbents, I'm sorry, they're telling Democratic candidates in other states, like Sherrod Brown, who's running in Ohio, Debbie Stabenow, who's running in Michigan, saying, do you back the Ned Lamont wing of the Democratic Party? Is this the kind of candidate you want? So Republicans think they got a gift, too, with Ned Lamont's primary win.
We're talking with NPR political junkie Ken Rudin, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Give us a call if you'd like to join the discussion. The number is 800-989-8255. Let's take a call now from Steve in Port Crane, New York. Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
Good.
I think this primary in Connecticut is showing the strength of the Democratic Party, actually, because, you know, they're willing to voice their opinion, their true opinion on an issue, instead of just maybe, you know, toe the party line. Like I see a lot of times the Republican Party, They may not think something is may not agree with something, but they'll just say it's a toe of the party line. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead.
And I'd like to think of Joe Lieberman, after a lot of things I've heard about him, I'd like to consider him like a Dino, what I call a Dino. That's a Democrat in name only, because he's done a lot of other things, like you know, vote for the break for the oil companies.
Right, Steve. I think we're breaking. Your phone is breaking up a little bit, so I'm going to ask Ken Rudin to just respond to the point that you're making, and also just Ken, it raises a thought in my mind, which is that if this is strengthening the Democrats, you were saying before, the Republicans are hoping to use this as a way to say to people, you don't want this kind of Democrat.
The cut and run Democrats.
On the other hand, maybe it's going to energize the Democratic
Party.
No,
I think it does. I think it does energize the Democratic Party, because we've heard all along Democrats saying that we can't stand the war, we can't stand the Bush policy, but we don't have any Democrats to stand up and say anything. We don't have leadership in Congress. We don't have the kind of folks to say, look, you're wrong, and make us proud to be Democrats. The angry wing, I don't mean this as a pejorative, but the angry wing of the Democratic Party, the people angry about the war, angry about the Democratic compliance in the war, they look at the Lamont win and say, look, this is exactly what we wanted all along. This is what we believe in our hearts. This is what which should be the issue in 2006 and 2008. So in that sense, I think that Lamont gives these people that feeling that they hope to have had with Howard Dean, didn't have it in 2004, but they could have it this year.
I want to get to one other subject with you, at least, because in other news today, we learned that the Republican mayor of Sugar Land, Texas, which is Tom DeLay's hometown, is going to run as a write-in candidate to replace DeLay in the House. Tell us about that.
Well, Tom DeLay was poisoned for the Republican Party, and Tom DeLay knew it, and that's why in June, even though he had already won the Republican primary in Texas 22, he announced he would resign from Congress. But he had hoped, and the Republicans had hoped, that they would be allowed to replace DeLay on the ballot. Local courts, federal courts, and the Supreme Court refused to go along with it. All agreed that the Texas law says you cannot replace Tom DeLay on the ballot. So basically, Tom Lay had two choices. Either he could have run again, which would be kind of weird because he already announced that he had no intention of serving in Congress. He was moving to Virginia. Or he could do what he did yesterday, saying, I am not going to run. I'm going to do everything I can to get my name off the ballot. This is a district that President Bush won with 64% in 2004. On paper, and there's a difference between reality and on paper, but on paper, this is a Republican district. David Wallace, the mayor of Sugarland, is probably the strongest Republican candidate to hold the seat for the GOP. Nick Lamson is the Democrat who's running. He's a former member of Congress who has a lot of money behind him. But in the history of the House of Representatives, only three members have won by a write-in candidate, none since 1982. And it's a difficult task to get people to bring in a pencil, bring in a pen, and write the name out. So it's a tough case. But it is a Republican district.
He could win. There's a possibility.
He could win. The Republican Party is certainly better off without having Tom DeLay as its nominee. And Tom DeLay knows that.
And just touching on one more of the primary races, incumbents appear to be on a serious losing streak. Cynthia McKinney lost her primary runoff. Is this the end of her career?
Well, she lost once before. Back in 2002, she implied that President Bush knew about 9/11 in advance. The voters didn't like that. They threw her out in 2002. She came back in 2004. Then she had this scuffle last March with a Capitol Hill police officer where she allegedly clobbered him with a cell phone. Voters said, look, she's very controversial, but she's a strong liberal and stands up for her constituency. But many people see her as an embarrassment. And the guy who beat her is a real non-entity of a candidate. Hank Johnson, a very, I don't even know what to describe him. He's not a fascinating guy. He's not a spellbinding orator like Cynthia McKinney is. But again, a lot of voters in Georgia's 4th District were embarrassed by her, and they voted her out a second time.
Maybe they wanted a boring candidate instead of such a controversial one. Thanks again for being with us, Ken.
Thanks, Lynn.
NPR's political junkie, Ken Rudin. He's also NPR's political editor. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary.
Land, and take over this beautiful land.